rid of the control of those people. So that's when the disengagement, the whole disengagement project of 2005 was part of this Ghetto Palestine project. And the goal, explicitly stated, was to wall off the West Bank and create in the West Bank a series of Gaza Strips. And I live in one of them in Bethlehem. Qalqilya was the first one in the north. There's one in the north that doesn't have concrete walls around it. It has electronic fences because it's a rural area. But the fact is the Bantustans, the ghettos, you know, we would call them reserves or reservations. You know, ghetto is a term from Nazi-occupied Europe. But you can pick your term, whatever term pleases you to describe, to territorially separate the indigenous population from the settler population, and then give them some sort of autonomous rights. You know, you probably understand that in Canada, how you have a native population that has some sort of autonomy, but whose land we can pillage when necessary, because we don't know what the frontiers of the next economic, now our frontiers are the Inuit. We wouldn't care about the Inuit for 100 years, and now we're going up there, you know, and so the projects to create some sort of level of autonomy less than statehood, less than independence is the goal. And so creating this project in Palestine was something that Olmert was very, very clear about. And Dov Weisglass, who is the sort of Karl Rove to Sharon and Olmert and Tzipi Livni, he called this project, the creation of the wall, the removal from Gaza, he called it the formaldehyde solution. The idea was that you take the most important elements of the Israel-Palestine conflict, Jerusalem, settlements, borders, and refugees, the four most important issues that Israel cannot solve, because solving any one of those issues undermines its project. You take those four issues and you put them in formaldehyde. So that's why he called it the formaldehyde solution. If you want to read another amazing interview that will tell you everything you need to know about Palestine, look up the interview with Dov Weisglass called the formaldehyde solution. Dov Weisglass is the one who also was the one who formidable clarity to the siege on Gaza when he called it the diet. He said, we're going to put them on a diet. And that has worked out to be a meticulous program where they literally have algorithms for caloric intake divided by population, depending on the foods. They break all the foodstuffs into calories. They break all the populations and age brackets into demographics. And then they do an algorithm for what the caloric intake to enter into Gaza so that people are on the edge of starvation, but they're not starving. That's the goal. So, you know, we should be careful when we say things like Gazans are starving, because it does undermine the independence, the autonomy of the Gaza Strip, which is actually not starving because they took initiative on their own to open the tunnels, to make them bigger, to get proper trade through the tunnels. And the collective, the societal collective will to look after one another is vibrant in Gaza. Nobody starves to death. So we should be careful in trying to implicate Israel in starving Palestinians, undermining Palestinian autonomy and independence and political initiative by saying they're starving, because they aren't. But Dov Weisglass is the key advisor to those three, you know, Sharon, Olmert, and then Livni. I mean, she won the election, but she wasn't able to form a government. She would have been the next prime minister. She actually has more, Kadima has more seats in the Knesset than Netanyahu does, but he was able to form a coalition with the, you know, the right-wing religious parties that, if people here knew what they stood for, what they said, what they believed, what they did on the streets, you know, I mean, it's a religious fundamentalism that's not any different than a Taliban type of fundamentalist approach to religion. I mean, in the settlements, you know, they have men and women swimming pools, and you know, women have to be separated during, you know, the whole deal. It's all there. You know, they'll stone protest demonstrations. They'll throw you know, eggs or rotten fruit at women that are riding by on their bicycles if they don't have full length. The kind of things that if the Palestinians did, there would be like the Security Council would meet about it. You know, these parties are representative in this way, and therefore Netanyahu was able to form a government. But Weisglass is really the the sort of the advisor behind these people that is the most. So he called it the diet, he called it the formaldehyde solution. And he said, because after Sharon called for the disengagement, these right-wing people that I just described, these fundamentalists, actually issued a Jewish fatwa or whatever you call it, to say, you know, God was going to strike down Sharon for giving up any piece of the land of Palestine, you know, the land of Eretz Israel, in this disengagement. And Weisglass, in this interview, confronts that idea and says, I don't understand why these settlers are upset. The settlers, he said, should be dancing around Sharon's office because of this plan, the plan to create ghettos, which will leave, he said, 90% of the settlers in place. So this removal from Gaza, which wasn't a withdrawal, withdrawal is a military term and a political term with consequences that were not reached in Gaza. Gaza is still held by Israel in what is called belligerent occupation, and that's renewed by the Israeli High Court every year, that they hold Gaza in belligerent occupation. What they did was they removed the settlers, and they moved the bases of the army from inside Gaza to the border. So now, if you were to drive up to Gaza, which you can't do because the military is all around the border and they won't let people come close, but were you to do that, you would see the Gaza Strip completely encircled with the sea on one side with warships off it, drones flying around it, and all along the border, military bases, right? Like if we think, we only know one prisoner, right? We know Gilad Shalit. He was taken prisoner. How was he taken prisoner? They dug a tunnel underneath the wall, and the military base was so close to the wall that they could dig a tunnel under and come up to the base, grab Shalit, and bring him, okay? That just gives you an idea of where the bases are. The bases are all around the Gaza Strip. So when we see rocket fire coming out of Gaza, this is again a tangent, but when we see rocket fire coming out of Gaza, and we say, oh, they're firing it at some kindergarten or a nursing home or something, right? They're firing it at military bases that are all around the Gaza Strip. Thousands, tens of thousands of soldiers, pieces of artillery, tanks, all amassed along the border of Gaza. If you were to fly over, it would look like a military siege in proper terms. And so that's why when we use some of these terms in Palestine, like apartheid, like ghetto, like siege, these terms are not provocative terms. They're core dictionary definition, political definitions of what is happening. Now, in order to create a ghetto state that has some sort of less autonomy, when the world is unanimous on the Israel-Palestine conflict, and has been for probably 40 years, the whole world regularly votes for Palestinian rights and against Israeli crimes. You know, in Canada, of course, I'm not going to get into this history because I think this audience knows it well, but Canada has switched and is no longer voting, or we used to abstain mostly, but on these resolutions that regularly reaffirm the international community, the world communities, take on elementary justice for Palestinians. And so Canada comes into this, again, out of the toolbox of foreign policy. Here's a chance to intervene in the Israel-Palestine conflict, you know, whether it's justified or not, probably the most important, most significant political conflict in the world, and has been for however many years. Again, legitimacy can be debated about whether that is the case, whether that should be the case, but it is the case. It's the most covered conflict in the world and whatnot. So here's Canada with an opportunity to intervene in this conflict in a way to create this, to legitimize, the key term is legitimize, this ghetto state. And how Canada has done that is by supporting the creation, whole cloth creation, of a Palestinian security force. And in doing so, began that process after the election of Hamas in Palestine in 2006. And at first, the goal wasn't to create a security force. It was to create a contra force. And I was living in Gaza when that contra force came about. And there was a weapons shipment that actually, I mean, we should talk about these things in the question and answer period, but there's lots of anecdotes that I could tell you about. But my connection to this conflict isn't reading newspapers or you know, interviewing Peter McKay or something like this. I was on the ground in Gaza with Hamas fighters who intercepted a weapons shipment from Canada and the US through Egypt in this conflict between Fatah and Hamas, where the goal was to wage a dirty war against the Hamas government, so that the security forces of Mahmoud Abbas, previously Arafat, so that those security forces didn't switch sides and back the elected government. It'd be the equivalent of Harper losing this election, and then the entire RCMP and police forces and the Canadian forces saying, well, we don't recognize that election. We're actually still backing Harper. I mean, it's something so absurd in our narrative that we would never even, I mean, we would scoff at it. In Palestine, this is Canadian policy, to back an unelected regime, to create a situation where we were militarily attempting to overthrow a democratically elected government. And I lived that conflict in the Gaza Strip for 6 months of probably the craziest warfare that I experienced in a decade working in Palestine, because it was all small arms. It was in the densely populated Gaza City environment, or the refugee camp environment, and it was constant. And it was an attempt to militarily overthrow Hamas. This, I don't know who gave them their intelligence that the security forces of Abbas and Arafat were going to be able to overthrow the Qassam brigades of Hamas, because it was ridiculous on the ground. It was clear what was going to happen. And what Hamas did was actually quite disciplined in trying to figure out alternative ways to deal with what was essentially a terror campaign led by Canadian and American ally Mohamed Dahlan, to bomb internet cafes to make it seem like Hamas was banning internet, like they were the Taliban or something like this, kidnapping Hamas officials, imprisoning people, this kind of a dirty war, bombing, assassinations, ultimately culminating in Hamas saying, enough is enough, and exerting the political and military prowess and advantage that they had on the ground in Gaza to expel Dahlan's forces. And, literally, those forces, when it came down to the moment of clarity, those forces climbed over the wall in ghetto Gaza, climbed over the wall to get to Israel, and made panicked phone calls to Israel saying, they're coming to get us, help us, right? Because we're your ally, and the reason we're in this position, people were saying, is because we backed your strategy. And they literally chased them in their underwear out of the Gaza Strip. And that's how the story played out. And in fact, with the Palestine papers that we just saw recently, Saeb Erekat, who is the one who had to resign because of the Palestine papers, is quoted in the Palestine papers saying to the Americans in 2007, we need to do something or else they're going to chase me across the bridge into Jordan. And so this was the real narrative. And so what did they do? The Israelis arrested the elected Hamas officials, parliamentarians, 45 of them, and put them in prison in Israel and denied quorum to the parliament. So the parliament was sitting like this, and these are each a seat in parliament of elected officials. Well, there's 40, Palestinians, you've probably seen it, put their political prisoners, they put photos of them on the chairs. So they had photos of the prisoners on the chairs, and then when it came time for the Canadian-backed government to create an interim government, and Salam Fayyad, the IMF World Bank character, stood up front and said, who supports this? And all the Fatah hands go up, all the Hamas guys are in jail, and then, oh, there you go, we got, there's our interim government, there's our legitimacy for ousting the elected government. That's when Canada, who was the first to boycott Hamas, reinstituted funding to the Palestinian Authority. That's when Salam Fayyad, who got 2.5% of the popular vote in the election, holds two seats in the Palestinian parliament, became the prime minister. That's when Peter McKay started speaking out and saying, Salam Fayyad is this great leader, he's this, this was the project. The project was attempted to be militarily, and again, like I said at the beginning, it's about a toolbox. And in the toolbox, one of them is Contras to try to overthrow the government, and that didn't work. So now you try something different. So now we turn it into the diplomatic playing field. We overthrow the government through some tricks of politics. And since that happened, since the elected government of Hamas was overthrown, there's been 450 laws passed by this unelected government through fiat, essentially, passed that fundamentally restructured civil society in Palestine. Because the part that needed to be, in order that, as I said, Erekat didn't get chased in his underwear into Jordan, that it was necessary to undermine Hamas's legitimacy in the West Bank and its popular support. So how do you do that?